The following podcast is a Dear Media production.
Hi, guys. Welcome to All the Fails today. I have Michael Rappaport, who everybody, every one of you has been DMing me and texting me saying, when can I meet Michael? When can I have drinks with Michael? Is Michael single? What do you know about Michael? And so here I have brought him. I am offering him up to you guys, and we are going to do a deep dig into his life and talk about the insurmountable odds that he has overcome to be where he is today.
Yes.
Welcome.
Glad to be here.
You're so kind to do it.
Thank you.
Truly, you have so much going on right now. It's so nice of you.
Appreciate it.
You just got back from Israel again.
Just got back from Israel. Yep. And that was a very, I would say it's a great trip. It's hard to say great trip. It was a great trip in terms of, it was a great trip. But I mean, there's just so much sadness and there's so much distress and there's so much heartbreak and there's so much concern. You know, I think it's important to stand up and, you know, I am not the most traditionally religious Jewish person by any means, but you have to stand up. And, you know, I don't want to go down the whole rabbit hole of it, but, you know, the fact that so many people in our profession are not saying anything in any way, shape, or form. You don't have to be as bombastic or vulgar or as combative as I am or as anybody else is, but to say nothing and knowing that in show business and in my business, in our business, so many issues are talked about, so many speeches are made, so many hashtags are used, so many, you know, different, you know, we're going to launch this campaign and that campaign are used from the voices that we have to say nothing about any of it. The silence is just so upsetting to me and surprising to me. So, you know, it is what it is. And you know, as far as people, you know, supporting me and people coming up to me, you know, whether it's Israel or it's this show or that show, you know, in our business, you have a bigger problem if nobody knows who you are, if you've been doing this for 30 years.
That's what Jason always says. He's like, Jenny, if it stops, then I'll really trip out. Where is your wife in all of this? Does she say anything to you? Like, is she ever scared or does she feel like...
She's definitely, you know, concerned about, you know, she's obviously, you know, you hear these things and, you know, she's concerned about, you know, making sure that everything is safe with me and with her.
Yeah.
But in terms of the point of view and the, she understands and is supportive of the why and how I'm articulating myself. She understands that. She wants me to be careful, obviously, and I want to be careful. And, you know, I mind myself and take precautions when I feel like I need to take precautions. But, you know, I mean, she's in the same place that I am. You know, she's been to Israel with me both trips. I'm just sort of the, you know, the one who's on blast more.
The front man.
Yeah, I'm the front
the
man.
Front
I'm
man.
The front man of all the shit talking. But, you know, here we are. You know, here we are.
But you grew up in New York. Your family's Polish. They're Jewish.
Russian Polish.
And you grew up here.
Yes, in New York City. Born and raised in New York City, Manhattan. Born in New York Hospital. Raised in Manhattan my whole life.
Wow. And where'd you go to school? Wait, but you got kicked out of high school.
I got kicked out of...
Tell me about
every,
that.
I went to a different school from the third grade to the 12th grade.
What? Because you were being kicked out every time?
Yeah.
Wait, you're like one of the kind of kids my son would want to hang out with.
Ha, ha, ha.
So, wait.
Does your son get in trouble?
Nobody likes all those kids. His friends now all don't go to the same school as him because they've all been kicked out. But they come to my house for Dungeons & Dragons
got
on Fridays.
It. Well, at least they're in the Dungeons & Dragons. That sounds...
Yeah.
That sounds...
Yeah. I mean, it gets bloody and scary.
Yeah. It's better than nothing. I there's other things he could be into besides Dungeons and Dragons. Yeah, I think so.
Well, so what? Where were you in school? Were you in private schools, public schools?
Or I was
did you
in
try
public
everything?
Schools. Then I was public schools. Then I went to private schools. And I went back to public schools and graduated from Martin Luther King High School, which is on the west side, which is across the street from LaGuardia, the Performing Arts School, the famous school that Fame, the movie Fame and the TV show Fame were, you know, inspired by or, you know, I guess it was about those school. And, you know, I was just bad. I was just, there's not like stories to tell you why I was so bad. I was just, the word that came up was disruptive. I was very, very, very disruptive.
Amazing.
And did not care to be in school, was not interested in anything in school other than playing basketball and, you know, hanging around my friends. I was not interested in any of it. I thought all of it.
Uh-huh.
English, Spanish, math, science, all history, American history, European, all of it was just fucking stupid as shit. And I had no interest in any of it at all. There was never a semester where I was interested. There was never a teacher that got me interested. There was never like, oh, this, I could give a fuck about any of it. And oh, that and a, you know, sort of, it just, I mean, I just couldn't give a fuck about it. I just could not, I just wanted that bell to ring every day of school from the 12th grade back to, you know, preschool. I just wanted out. I did not want to be in there. It's, I don't, it's, when I look back, like, that's really what it was. And I just was just, you know, like, I was in public schools. I was in very, very, very bad public schools. And, you know, my, you know, 10th, 11th, to 12th, or 11th to 12th. I mean, like bad schools, bad, bad, bad schools. I mean, bad. And, you know, it just
was. What's your parents? Were they involved?
They had thrown the fucking towel in by the ninth grade. They were just like, they, you know, tried everything. You know, private schools, tutors, you know, fucking everything. And they tried everything. And it just, you know, I understand. They were just like, you know, yeah. you get to a point where it's also, this is different parents than from what we are. This is like, you know, I'm 53. So like my parents, you know, my parents are great, but they were just like, I just.
No, they didn't want to deal with us. The boomers.
What more they could do?
Like, what?
You know, no. What more can you do? You're getting kicked. You got kicked out of third grade public school. That's in a, in New York City in the 70s. That's an accomplishment.
That is amazing, actually.
So, you know, like it was that. And then the next school and then the next year and then this suspension and that suspension. And it was every fucking, it just wouldn't stop.
And wait, what is your birth order? How many kids?
I have an older brother.
And was he the golden child?
He wasn't a golden child. He's okay. Very different. Like
he liked school.
He did like school,
okay. And
he's very different than I am. So it was just me and him. I have an older sister, a half sister. She grew up with her mother mostly,
okay. But
it was just me and my brother as divorce home.
Uh-huh.
You know, my father and my mother on the weekends. You know, very Kramer versus Kramer story. You know,
yes,
you know, very, very, very much that. Very much Kramer versus Kramer.
Uh-huh.
Very much. That sort of situation in the 70s and the 80s, yeah.
Okay, I get it. Yes. I'm also a Kramer versus Kramer, but with multiple steps that came in and out. Multiple steps.
Where'd you grow up?
I lived with my mom in San Diego until I was like 12. And then she sort of like, well, I feel bad telling you this story because she's at my apartment right now. And now she's like, we're working together on something. So I hate to like throw her under the bus.
Don't throw her. Just put her by the bus.
I'm going to put her next to the bus. We're basically like at 12 years old.
We're at the bus stop.
Okay. I came home from spending a summer in Oregon with my aunt and she was like living on some guy's boat. And she was basically like, I don't know how to be a mom anymore. You need to go live with your dad.
Wow.
So I lived with my father for high school. My sister, who's 16 months younger, she went back and lived with my mom. So we were separated. And then it was, I don't know. It wasn't really the parent trap unless you wanted to be like, you know, the bizarro version.
I got you.
But yeah, so it got weird.
You
so
know,
I definitely relate to that.
It's funny because now, you know, like all, like the way my parents didn't explain divorce. I didn't ask about the divorce.
Yeah.
Like it just was what it was. And obviously there's ramifications on how it affected me, how it affected my
your relationships,
perception
for sure.
Perception on relationships, 100%. But it is what it is. It's like, I don't think you could fix the shit. It just, you know, like, you just go, you know, like, you just go. Like, I think, you know, if you're married and you grow up with a two-family home, that might be, that doesn't necessarily mean that your kid's going to, I don't know. It's just, I, you know, like, my kids are 21 and 23. So when I look at, like, the parenting and this and all of it's just like, you know, the therapy and all this shit. It's like,
do you have like you're not with their mother?
No.
And how did that go down? And was that sort of like traumatic for you because
Yes. You're
the child of a divorce?
Yes.
It so you was don't want to fail.
No, I didn't want to fail. I didn't want to fail at marriage. I didn't want to, you know, be divorced, you know, get divorced with my kids. And, you know,
how old were they when you guys split?
They were 3 and 5 or 4 and 6, something like that. But, you know, I just, you know.
Were you living in L.A.?
In L.A., yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. And, you know, you have a bird's eye view. I have a bird's eye view on things now. I don't think it's bird's eye. I think it's kind of just starting to, like, look, you know, you get a perspective on it that you didn't have or that I didn't have. And, you know, it just, I don't know, you know, it's like, there's certain things that just play themselves out, and you just got to keep going and keep trying and keep trying to figure things out and keep trying to improve and do the best you can. You know, I've definitely, you know, I have like a certain amount of guilt over it, and I know that their mother does, and you know, and how it affects the kids, and you know,
I still wish guilt about it.
Of course. I'm sure my parents have guilt. My father's 90. I'm sure my mother, I know she has.
I try to guilt my parents, but they don't see, it's like different they with have that
guilt.
Generation.
They have guilt.
I try to lay it on thin.
Yeah, they don't need you to lay it. They have it. Uh-huh. I think, you know, like as I get old, I look at my parents just as, you know, older people. Mm-hmm. At times I'm able to see them as just people. They have guilt. And you know, no one wants that shit. Because I think it's like at the end of the day, you don't set, it's like a failure. So you don't get married, you know, thinking you're going to get divorced. It's like, you know,
yes, of course.
It's like a failure, you know, so it sucks. It is what it is. You know, it sounds like a, you know, like a sort of cliche thing, but it is what it is. And you just have to keep trying.
How did you sort of like get yourself out of that? Like how long was that period? Because, you know, like, I don't know, some divorces, it can be years.
We're kind of in a better place these last couple of years. My kids and their mom, and she is no day at the beach, and she'll be the first to tell you. And I am certainly no day at the beach. So it was challenging, but at a certain point, you just got to go, why are we arguing? We might as well be married.
Right.
There's no sense.
Yeah.
Like, this is what it is. You fucked up. I fucked up. We both fucked up. It fucked up.
Yeah.
We fucked up. We didn't do probably as good as we would do now, knowing that what we know. But yet it happened. So you just like, you know, you got to at a certain point do the best you can to put your fucking guns down and just, you know, and like, okay, you know, the kids are doing this. What are they, you know, and move forward. That's I think ultimately that's the only thing you could do, because the combativeness is just not good for myself. It's not good for her. It's not good for her kids.
Right.
It's just not good. It's not good for, you know, my new wife. It's not good for, you know, whatever her situation is and blah, 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 blah. You know, I just don't think so. So like I say, it's easier said than done while you're in it. But like when you get perspective, you're like, this is fucking dumb. Like it wasted so much time and so much energy. And, you know, and I think a lot of times relationships, whether it's, you know, romantic, you know, boyfriend, girlfriend, you know, lover, or even friends, you know, sometimes you just, you could miss each other. You could miss the, you know, going like this. And those misses are so easy to see and realize when they're happening. But it's like, you know, some of those misses, they just.
Oh my God. I mean, even a relationship that works is so fucking hard.
Yeah. You miss.
Like, I mean.
Marriage is not fucking easy.
Marriage is so annoying.
It's like a thing, you know, you gotta like. Pay attention to it. You have to pay attention to it.
Jason's always saying to our couples therapist, he's like, how are we having the same conversation we had, the same one we had 15 years ago, we're still having? Like, we're still in the same defenses. And it's like, because like...
I know.
These are my issues. They always will be.
Yeah.
I'm triggered, you're triggered, and here is our dance.
Yeah, yeah.
So like, I can't even... I actually looked at these home movies of my parents before they had me, and I'm just like, oh my God, those people should not be having children together. It was so like obvious.
Totally agree that my parents should not have had children together.
What the fuck? Right?
They sort of met in a Mad Men kind of way. Like, my father was younger. He wasn't my mom wasn't my father's secretary, but she was a secretary.
Oh my God.
It was
perfect.
Like some Mad Men shit. And it was very quick. So I'm like, you guys got married after 30 something days. Like, of course this shit wasn't going to fucking work out. And these are sensible, functioning, well about their lives. You know, you would think.
Right.
You would think, you know, New York Jews, but they fucked up, you know. But that being said, it is what it is. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, yo, their shit was doomed to begin with.
Right.
Doomed.
And how old were you when they split? What's the age difference between you and your brother?
I don't know marriage. I never saw my parents. I have no memory of my parents being together.
Right.
And I want to go, oh, that's so sad. It's not so sad. It is.
Well, when you're young enough, it's not. It's just, it's your normal. I agree. Because that's how it was for my sister and I as well. We were young enough that we didn't. It's not like I was ever wishing for them to be together.
Yes, I agree. I agree. But yeah, they were two and my brother was four. My brother's 2 years older. So yeah.
Okay. Okay. Oh my God.
Yeah, crazy, right?
I mean, so crazy. And do you feel like, so when the school stuff starts to happen, you're living with who? Your mom or your dad? You're just going back and
mostly
forth.
Mostly in your mother on the weekends.
Okay.
But base was my father.
That's interesting because I feel like back in the day.
Yeah. It's Kramer versus Kramer shit. Because yeah. like the father, yeah, it was very much that situation.
Wow.
Very, very, very much.
Uh-huh.
Very much that. And, you know, New York, East Side, more East. We're more East than where that movie took place. But that movie, it resonated with me as a child.
Yeah.
And I didn't understand it altogether. And it's hard for me to watch now. Like,
I
because of not just the story, but also like that Central Park, you know, they're running around Lexington Avenue. Like, I know that shit very, like, it's like
visceral.
Very much so. Very much so.
Wow.
Very much so. So, you know, like, if I ever got a chance to talk to Dustin Hoffman or Meryl Streep, like, that would be one of the, that'd probably be the first, because that movie, like, resonated with me.
Rocked you.
The whole thing, the whole part of it, that whole movie, you know, was like.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so.
And when did you start acting? And like, do you find, because I always felt like the theater saved me. It was like a place where I could finally, well, I loved the idea that my parents had to sit in a dark room for 2 hours and listen to me. That was amazing. But also just the ability to sort of purge some of this, all the shit that was going on. How did you sort of find acting?
I found acting. I wanted to be a basketball player. That's what I wanted to be.
Uh-huh.
So when I talk about like school, like that's what I was, that was my shit, was basketball. I thought up until I was 16, I was going to be in the NBA. My whole life was structured around being in the NBA. Until it was about 15, 16, I was like, I'm not going to be in the NBA. And not only am I not going to be in the NBA, I'm not even going to college and play Division I basketball. So 17, 18, I started getting into trouble and shit like that. And, you know, I'd always loved.
Like, what does that mean, trouble? Like, just, were you in a gang?
No, I just hung around tough people.
Okay.
Like tough people.
Like what kind of people?
Like tough. You know,
mafia?
Like just no, not mafia. just people that, you know, like had not much going on and their circumstances were, you know, they grew up in tough circumstances and
yeah,
you know, just were just fucking tough people, you know, tough and scared and in some ways desperate. But they were my friends. They were my friends since I was young. And then also some of my closest friends weren't, but it just, you know, we're just kids that I met playing basketball. And it was all, you know, kids, you know, from Brooklyn and Harlem, all black kids. That's what I grew up around.
Okay.
From like 12, you know, like that's what I was just around. And it was from basketball that really, you know, just happened because we were just, I like to play basketball. So
yeah.
I always loved movies. I never thought about being an actor, but I loved, like I wanted to be Rocky.
Uh-huh.
I didn't want to do what Sylvester Stallone did. I wanted to be Rocky. I wanted to be John Travolta in Saturday Night Fever. Like, I wanted to be that, right? I didn't think about, like, I want to be an actor. And, you know, I loved Eddie Murphy when he was on Saturday Night Live. I loved Eddie Murphy's stand-up in Delirious. And I wanted to be Eddie Murphy. I didn't even think about wanting to do it.
Yeah.
So, I started thinking about like Plan B when I was 16, 17.
Plan B. I love that.
Yeah, it was
I'm
Plan B.
Drop that on my kids today.
Yeah. And and then I started doing stand-up comedy when I was 19.
Wow. And stand-up's like the craziest. It's in terms of just rejection right away.
It's all the same to me. The rejection.
Yeah.
That was the one thing that I never had a problem with was failing.
Yes.
I did not have a problem with failing. I didn't have a problem with, you know, I get frustrated to this day if you don't get parts that you want.
Sure.
But I don't get frustrated. I don't take them personal. I'm just like, why the fuck? You know, like, you know, like it should be me, you know, da, da, da. Failing, you know, doing stand-up is a different thing, but I don't take it personal because it could be you're not doing good. Could be the crowd's not, you know, the crowd could be tired. You know, it could be a variable of things. It could be you're just not. You're trying new shit. You might have lost the crowd earlier. They could. So, you know, I have thick skin for that.
Yeah.
You know, as far as not getting parts in movies or TV shows, I get frustrated with that because, you know, I mean, I always think, well, I'm the best. I'm the fucking best. I should get all the fucking parts.
Oh, my God,
parts.
I love you.
But then also, you know, as you get older and you understand the business world, like, they might not want a blonde-headed 6'3"
arbitrary
person.
Arbitrary as fuck. I say this to Jason all the time. I was like, why would anybody become an actor? It's the most random.
Yeah.
Once you have been on the other side casting people, you're like, wait, hold on.
You can't take it personally.
I dedicated how much time to this?
Yeah.
You can't take it personal.
Might, like, if me and you were to be a couple, they might go, well, we want a guy with dark hair next to Jenny, you know? Yeah. So it just might
literally
be a thing a director has in his head. Or, you know, we look too much like we could be cousins or brothers that we want.
We might be if we do the DNA.
You know, right.
Yeah.
But it could be a lot of those things. As you've done on the other side and you part of casting.
Yes.
But there's still, like, I don't take it personal. It's just like, fuck, man. Like, you know, but in general, there's, and this is the truth, I've had so many opportunities to do so much shit.
Yeah.
You know, there's one, two things that I'm like, fuck, man. You know, like, even after I saw
them. Tell me. What are they?
The one part, I'll say this. The only part that I wish I would have gotten to play, and I said this through the beginning, I didn't get an opportunity to play it. And I haven't had this conversation with Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah.
And I think he'd be like, huh? Because it's his thing and it's his gorgeous painting and the movie turned out incredible. Is in Inglourious Bastards, I wanted to play the bear Jew that Eli Roth played, the director who did a great job. That being said, Eli Roth, who's a great director, is a director.
And you know, that was just like, oh, let me have my buddy come do this.
And he did great. But it meant so much to me at the time to represent and to play that part.
Yes.
And I wanted to play that part and I had heard about it and I didn't get to audition. I didn't get to meet. You know, I had heard they were giving Eli Roth and I was like, what the fucking Eli Roth? He's a fucking director. And I love Eli Roth.
Yeah.
It's not him. And Quentin Tarantino is, and that movie, I love it. And when I watch the movie, I don't think about it, but that character that represents so much of what my agenda was as a young actor.
Yes.
I would have liked to have played that part. That's the only part. And I want to stress, I mean no disrespect to Eli Roth or Quentin Tarantino, because that movie to this day.
Yeah.
I mean, I love all his fucking movies.
Me too.
But that he's one part genius. Because of what it meant. And it's such a, you know, to play a fucking, like a Jew that goes back to kill, you know, Nazis.
Yeah.
Like, that is so much of my spirit of Judaism.
Yes.
That is so much the spirit of what I was raised on as a Jew.
Yeah.
Because like I said earlier, I wasn't like the most religious Jew, practicing Jew, but
you had pride always.
Not being a pussy Jew. And not that, and when I say pussy Jew, it doesn't mean physical.
Right.
You know, you think like when you're a kid, like, I'm not gonna be a pussy Jew, but like, you know, as I'm getting older and we get into this post October 7th thing, when you talk about ranting on Instagram, you know, being a pussy Jew and not being a pussy Jew is, you know, it obviously you think physical, but it's about standing up for who you are.
Yes.
It could be standing up, you know, quietly. It's about, you know, sticking by Jews, sticking by Israel, you know, celebrating Shabbat, practicing those things, or donating money, or talking shit, you know, unabashedly on social media. There's different parameters to what I mean, especially now as I get older, to being not being a pussy Jew.
Yes.
It doesn't mean you have to go fucking, you know, out and hit people over the head with a brick.
Right.
But that spirit of that bear Jew and Inglourious Bastard
was
something and is something that is in me. And it's always been in me in regards to the Jewish part of who I am.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Oh,
so that's the only part. There's other, you know, movie, that guy was, I could have done. But for the most part, everything has worked out the way it's supposed to work out. And I get a big piece of the cake.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
No, it's amazing.
You always want more piece of the cake.
Of course.
Let's not bullshit it.
Yeah.
But I've had a lot of pieces of cake.
But you have to have that hunger. Otherwise, you would never be in this at all.
Yeah. When you stop caring that you don't get the part, when you stop caring that you don't do your best, when you stop caring that, you know, you didn't try your hardest, and when you stop caring that when you did try your hardest, you might not have had your best night when I'm performing, doing stand-up or anything.
Yeah.
You know, that's when you should stop doing it.
Yes.
When you don't care.
Exactly.
That's when you're fucking trouble. That's why I think you're in trouble.
But when did you first start caring about acting? So, like, I kind of, like, took you off. You were into the basketball. You found out you weren't going to be playing B.
Yeah.
Did I use it right?
No.
You weren't
going to
play B.
No.
Professionally. So then when did you do your first, like, how? Were you, like, so discovered at, like, Rite Aid? Like, how did it happen?
I'll tell you a short version.
Okay.
Because it's confusing. But basically, my half-sister's stepfather is named Mark Lano. He's one of the co-owners of the Improv.
Oh, okay.
So I had gotten kicked out of, I didn't know anything about the Improv. I didn't know anything that he was a co-owner or anything. I knew them or whatever. But my sister moved to California when she was 13. My sister's name is Claudia Lano. She was an actress. She went to the performing arts school. She's a writer now, but she was on a show called Knott's Landing, which was
okay. Yeah.
So again, this was not anything I gave a fuck about. It was right. just I want to be in the NBA.
Yeah.
So I had gotten kicked out of summer camp. Halfway through
camp as well.
Summer.
Camp
so I went
work.
To July and my father's one thing was the summer was his own. I didn't right. know this, but yeah. I realized now he was like, you're not going to be here during the summer.
Yes.
You and your brother are not going to be here during the summer. So I got kicked out. And the next thing I know, I'm 13. I don't know what the fuck is going on. Yeah. I don't know what the plan was because you're going to go visit your sister. So I'm on a plane by myself, which is something we don't do at 13. I go to California. Yeah. And my sister at the time was having a lot of problems. My sister, it's open. She was fucking drugged out of her mind. She, okay. I didn't know, whatever.
Yeah.
But she was like, we're going to go to the club tonight. I was like, club. And we went to the improv. Mark, her stepfather, owned the improv.
Oh my God.
So I walked, she walked me. I didn't know what the fuck she meant by the club or the improv. It's 1983. And we go to the improv. And the first thing that I saw, I walked in the back, same improv as it is now. And Keenan Ivory Wayans was on stage. It's when Keenan had hair. You know, and I saw him doing stand up and I saw everybody doing stand up.
Yeah.
I saw, you know, that summer, Jay Leno, Jerry Seinfeld, fucking Robert Townsend. I mean, you name it.
Yes.
Everybody when they were Rodney Dangerfield. I mean, everybody. But I just wanted to play basketball. But I kept visiting my sister. I kept going to the improv. And I was around stand-up comedians. And I was at the improv although I was a kid.
Yeah.
I'd be eating cheeseburgers and shit. And, you know, and it was this comic. I mean, everybody. I seen everybody perform there. Roseanne. The only person I never got to see, and I would always miss it, was Eddie Murphy. And this is when he was in his prime.
No.
I wouldn't be there. I'd be in New York. And my sister would be like, Eddie Murphy came out with it. Fuck.
Oh, God.
That was like my fucking guy. And that kind of got in the back of my head when I was 17, 18. Like, maybe I'll try stand-up comedy. Like, I'll try it. So before I got in trouble when I was 19, and I was like, I'm going to try stand-up comedy. I tried stand-up comedy here in New York, and my goal was, at some open mic thing, my goal was, if I get laughs, you know, I think it's like 2 minutes they give you or 3 minutes, some crazy shit. I was like, or maybe 5 minutes. I'm 19. My attitude is insane. My attitude is off. I'm out of my mind. Like my attitude is fucking, my attitude is fucked up, but I have no fear. And so someone laughed.
No fear.
None. Zero. And a couple of people laughed. It's like 30 people in the room. It's like classic open mic.
Yeah.
Someplace in Times Square, 47th. I think it was Times Square area, West Side. And I was like, I'm going to do it again. So I went to California, got a bullshit job. And the first time I did they let me go up on a Sunday at the improv. And the first time I went up on a Sunday at the improv, Gary Marshall, the director of Flamingo Kid, director of Pretty Woman, he was there and his assistant was there. I literally was on stage for 5 minutes. And afterwards, his assistant came over to me and said, Gary wants to meet you. Would you come to blah, 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 blah? He's doing a play, blah, blah, blah. I was like, yeah, fuck yeah, you know. And, you know, that was like, yo, I'm going to be a fucking star. Like, I was like, I'm going to be a fucking star. Yeah. Like, you know, this is the first time I did stand-up. And Gary Marshall, who's like the shit.
Yes.
I'm going to be a fucking star.
Yeah.
You know, like, I can do this. When they gave me the scenes to read. Now, I've been doing stand-up. I've done it a few times. But when they gave me the scenes to read, it made more sense than any amount of basketball I ever played, any amount of practice that I ever played, any amount of games that I watched. It made more sense than doing stand-up comedy. I was like, this, I'm going to do this. Like, it literally was like, this, I could do this. Like, I remember reading the fucking paper. I was like, this is what I'm going to do. And next thing you know, I got, you know, it was just lucky breaks and good timing. I got this job and that job. And then I got, you know, and it just pop, pop, pop. And I was just lucky. I was just lucky and fearless.
Yes.
And got some good opportunities.
But you also have the fearlessness, but also you're so authentically yourself. I feel like so many actors that I went to school with or that I have worked with, they are trying to be good actors. Yeah. They aren't authentically themselves.
Yeah.
And when you find somebody who's just like fully like out there with who they are, yeah, you know, it's just so much easier to cast that.
Yeah,
like,
that was
that's
my strength.
What I want.
And there was a kind of, you know, and I got, yeah, exactly. That was my strength. And I think that is my biggest strength as a performer is to just like, I am comfortable in myself and I'm comfortable, you know, I've done it 30 years. Like I know what I bring best, you know, you sort of go, you know,
yes,
you have a
completely. But how did you get that? Like what?
I have no idea.
You were born with fearlessness.
When I talk about like being a pain in the ass, I talk about being kicked out of school and fucking nursery school. Like that's just, I just was like this, I'm just going.
But do you think it was nature or nurture? Like, is there something I should be doing to my children to like make them
don't
have
do anything.
That?
You don't want anything. You don't want to raise your children to be at all like Michael Rapaport. Well, Trust me, but
you know, the horrible thing was we were during the pandemic, we made Sid do this video where he had to say goodbye to his kindergarten teacher, like on video. Jason must have made that kid say goodbye, Miss Christina, like 60 times. And then at the end, he looks at me, he's like a terrible actor. Like, I don't know what to do.
He had him on some Stanley Kubrick shit.
Yeah.
Do it again.
Yes. But like Jason, like couldn't handle the fact that he's like, I have a son that like couldn't perform one line.
That's funny.
So we do want our son to have a little Michael Rapaport.
Right.
It is also like to not have a fear of failure is the best thing ever. And I do think that like acting brings that out because you do get just rejected constantly.
You do reject it constantly. You know, you're at work.
Yeah.
Could be doing six takes and not have it.
Yeah, for sure.
Right? You know, like you could just, you know, but I don't get discouraged when, like, if we're doing a take, if we're doing a scene and it's, I'm thinking the tone is this and we're doing it and doing it and doing it. First of all, I'm like, the director, like, just fucking spare me, man.
Yeah.
After the second one, like, come and fix me.
Please, yes,
because
exactly.
We're on take seven here, and you're just, like, I don't care. Give me the line reading. Yeah. I don't give a fuck, because my voice is starting to hurt. The crew's getting bored. Yeah. I'm getting bored.
Yeah.
Actress is getting bored. Let's fix this shit.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to say that I don't have feelings and shit and that I don't want to get it right and that I don't get, like, ah, shit. Of course I have that, but I inevitably have a belief and trust in what I'm doing.
Yes.
Inevitably, you know, like, so, but you know, if we're doing together, you know, when you're doing good and when you're not doing good, sometimes you think you're doing good though, and it might not be the right
tone.
You
see it later and you're like, that's not right.
Yeah. That too. Or, you know, sometimes like they might've wanted it faster or slower. I mean, the as many times as you've been on a set, you know, cause people always ask like, you know, what does a director do? Like the majority of directors that I've worked with, and I'm talking about good ones, The best direction and the most useful direction is either faster or slower.
It's so funny.
Like, do you get some kind of introspective, therapeutic shit?
I don't want to be therapized, and I don't
want them
to be.
Faster, slower. If you're not getting the joke, I'm like, give me the line reading. Because sometimes inflection, you can miss the joke. Like, your blazer's nice. And it could be, you know, say your blazer's nice. You know, it could be some shit, simple shit like that.
Yes.
You know, it could be. Yeah, I mean, we're kind of just talking about like the intricacies of acting, which I love. I love the intricacies of acting and, you know, getting a performance and stuff like that. But, you know, I feel like when you are working with somebody, you're in a safe space. So if you do fuck up, you fuck up. It's like, who cares? All right. You know, the cameras go out when you're shooting or the light blinks. We don't go, you dumb fuck, or the camera guy goes, sorry. And then they fix the fucking light and, you know, you go on. It's like, you know, that's.
Yeah.
I try not to, I'm just like, you know, with that stuff. But as far as personally, like, you know, my personality, like, I know when I step on toes, I know my personality in real life.
Like, what do you think is your fatal flaw as a person? Like, what do you, when you refer to like, oh, I'm tough, my personality, what is it?
Let's FaceTime my wife. No,
I need to know what she thinks.
No, I mean, you know, it could just be my one thing that I wish I was in more control of is my tone.
Okay.
My tone, it's a New York thing, but also I can't blame it just on New York. It's my tone. So sometimes my tone could be
aggressive.
It could be aggressive, more aggressive than I am aware of.
Uh-huh. And what triggers you? Like, what are the things that throw you over?
What triggers me? Fuck. Shit. Being hungry, uncomfortable, not being listened to, not being understood. I mean, there's a bunch of things. I'm not the easiest person to be around day in and day out. You know, like I am, you know, I have a lot. Like I have a, I have a sensations. I have sensations going, and there's a lot going on. You know, I'm moody and shit like that. But I feel like I'm getting better. I do feel like I'm getting better, and I feel like.
Do you guys do therapy? Are you into therapy in general?
I am. I am into therapy. I haven't been going to therapy for a while. I did a period of therapy. And I feel
you look guilty as you're saying this.
Well, no, because my wife's like, go to therapy. And she goes to therapy. And then I'm like, well, do we got to get another therapist? She's like, go to my therapist. Like, well, then that's like your home team therapist. It's like annoying. Your fucking coach.
Right.
You know, like, so I don't know. Listen, I could use fucking therapy. Trust me. I could use
Michael,
therapy.
I am your therapist.
Yeah. Are you? Yes. Yes. This is what this is, right?
This is therapy, yes.
We're just filming it.
We're just filming it. He's just my therapist
assistant.
Exactly.
He's taking notes. Like, we need to give this guy some Adderalls.
Yeah. He has your whole, like, recommendation that you'll leave with.
You know, some antidepressants, mood stabilizers. Like, I'll walk out and you guys give me a nice prescription. Cherry's Pharmacy. That's my pharmacy. And boom.
So funny. No, but I mean, it is interesting because I do think that when you do know your own shit,
yes,
it helps so much.
I know my shit. Rest assured, I know. I am very aware of my.
What would your kids say? Like, what are your kids' opinion? Do you think that you are a good parent? Like, have you been an involved dad?
Yes. As I've gotten older, not as much, but I do as much as I think they want at this age.
Yeah.
You know, by the time I was 19, I moved to LA. I was in a $325 a month apartment. I was not calling my parents every single day.
Right.
Nor did my parents want me to call them every single day. You know, we spoke on the phone. This is a different time, you know. And I was out. I was 19. I was so fucking young, 19. So, you know, my kids kind of have that, which is good. You know, you have to, and they're boys. I think that as a parent, you know, I look back, of course, there's things you like, you could do different and, you know, like the relationship with their mom and that things. But the good thing about being a parent is that it doesn't go away. So you have plenty of time to make
course up. Correct.
Course correct. And, you know, there's new things and there's new time. You know, their kids, my kids will need me and use me and get fatherly things for me in so many different ways that I don't know yet, you know, as they get older. You know, I think now it's kind of like, you know, with my kids in particular, you know, just kind of try to steer them on course.
Yes.
I think.
And are they like you or no?
One of them is not at all like me, and one of them is like me in more so, but is also a lot like his mom. So one of them is not like me or his mom, and one of them is a hybrid.
And who, are you closer to one, or does it sort of change?
It changes. I would say it changes.
That's how I feel. I'm like, I'm into you.
How old
I'm
are your kids?
You. So I have a 10-year-old and a 6-year-old.
Oh, so you got young kids, man. It's
2 boys.
Yeah, that's funny.
Woody Allen and Laszlo is like Kaiser Sose from Usual Suspects.
Nice.
Where he'll like fake an injury. I take him to the hospital and he's like, I was just kidding.
Fuck.
So that's who I have.
Right, I got you.
But like, what
you got Kaiser Sose and Woody Allen.
Yes!
Good shit.
Is there something that you think one day you'll be brought into therapy for with like you either
of
your sons?
I'm
and they're
waiting.
Like, it's this.
I'm waiting.
Do you know what it is? Because I want to be blindsided.
I don't know specifically, but I am waiting to be called into those sessions.
Uh-huh. Do you have an idea?
Of course. Of course. I mean, I think a lot of it would be me and my ex-wife.
Okay.
You know, you guys.
Yeah. You didn't band together for us or something like that.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
But I'm prepared for the.
Yes.
And I'm ready to take it.
Yeah.
And I think that's what you must do.
You have to.
Especially in that setting.
Yeah.
You know, because I think that that's the right thing to do. And I think, you know, when I was at that period of my life, particularly with my mother, and I had went to therapy and then I wanted to come and tell her all the shit that I had learned and all that stuff. She took it. My father, different, not so much, but it still doesn't matter.
Did you get the apologies you wanted from them? Because I think an apology is so healing. And I feel like I sort of
Do you think they're healing?
To hear it from your parent, yeah. Just hear them actually like, own your, like, to actually, like, accept your reality.
Yes, yes.
It feels so good.
Yes, yes. I don't want to go too deep, case any of them. My mother was very good about it.
Uh-huh.
My father is old school.
Okay. He's Mad Men.
He yeah, but he ain't, what's the guy's name on the show? What was
I mean, I don't know. I know him as John Hamm.
No,
but
he had an iconic character's name.
Oh, Don Draper.
Yes. He's not like that, but he's, I mean, my father's born in 1933.
Okay. Okay.
He's 90 years old. 1933.
Amazing. That's amazing.
You know what I'm saying? This is a different fucking time.
Right.
This is a totally different time. He's, you know, he's going to be 100.
That's
if
so
he keeps,
insane.
If he keeps going. This is a different fucking place. Uh-huh. So it's a different mentality. That being said, my father was extraordinarily patient with me and my brother.
Yeah.
Beyond anything you could imagine. Like I said, I was a motherfucker. He's steady.
Uh-huh.
Super steady with me growing up. Super fucking patient. Super steady. I feel like I am in therapy. My father will watch this. He says, fucking doesn't even have an iPhone.
I'm actually really close with your dad, so I'm going to send this to him.
I'm going to send this to him. I'm going to clip it.
I'm going to give him just that part about him.
So that, yeah, you know, these are not things I talk about often, but I'm talking about it with you. But,
yeah. Well, I love it. Especially since this is my first episode.
Yes.
I really needed you to open up and give it to me.
Yes. You know, yes. Okay.
What else? Well, God, I just want to know, like, so you're in this new relationship. You're living back. You're back in New York.
Yes. Full time. Left California.
And how do you love New York more? Like, is this just like home for you?
I've always loved New York more. I've always kept a little place in New York,
mm-hmm.
in one way or another. I've been in Los Angeles. I would say that was my home base. I don't like to admit it, but it was my home base predominantly since I was 19.
Yeah.
You know, I came back to New York and at one point I moved back to New York, but I had an apartment in LA. I always had something in LA and New York. But I think it was 4 years ago, we were like, I don't want to be here anymore. I don't like it here.
Yeah.
My kids were older. My son was in school here. And I was like, even, you know, I was like, I don't want to be in Los Angeles full time anymore. I don't want to be in Los Angeles. Yeah. Now, I like LA.
Yeah.
I like, you know, LA's fun. You know, Runyon Canyon, there's hiking, the weather is fucking awesome. You know, there's restaurant, it's easy to move around, especially when you have young kids. It's fucking easy getting your fucking car. You go to the grocery store, fill that shit up, and you park and and, you know, driving to private school, all that shit's easy. And, you know, and I was comfortable in LA, but we were just like, I don't want to be here anymore. I just didn't want to be there full time anymore. And I felt like the only way to get back to New York was to just, I have to get rid of my place in New York. We have to get rid of our place in LA and come.
Yeah.
And that and just whatever it's going to be, it's going to be. And that's what we did. And then I just like it here better. I like being here better. And I don't miss, outside of the friends in LA, I don't miss a fucking thing about LA.
Yeah,
I don't miss a fucking thing about Los Angeles. I don't miss a fuck. And there's a lot of good restaurants, all that shit. I don't miss a fucking thing when it's 2 degrees here. Although I think that those days are over because you think about this winter.
Oh, it's so strange.
This is global warming. It's real.
It's,
I mean, you're
spring.
Not, you didn't even wear a jacket today.
No.
We're in March. This is how you showed up.
Uh-huh.
I got a fucking big, I'm thinking like it's gonna.
Yeah, no, it's over.
There's no winter.
Uh-uh.
It's
the end of the world.
You know, it'll get colder again for a week or two.
Yeah. It'll like snow on Easter and then it'll be done.
Me and Marv were cleaning out our apartment the other day. She was doing most of the spring cleaning. She was like, do you even need these fucking boots? And I was like, I don't need these fucking boots. What the fuck do I need? I got my super duper snow boots and then my, you know, slushy boots, which you always need because there's those wet days. But what do you need fucking? We're not in Colorado.
No.
We're not in Utah. There's no snow.
There's no snow.
It snowed once.
And where do you guys are?
What the fuck happened? There's global warming. I thought it was going to be
like a blizzard this year.
It ain't.
My kids stayed home from school on a snow day where there was literally rain.
Those days are over.
It's over.
There's no snowball fight, snowman in New York City. That shit's done.
That is done.
It's fucking done.
But did you guys, so you guys just are here full time. Like you don't.
Yes.
Where else do you guys go?
We have a place in Connecticut.
Okay. And you like Connecticut?
I love our place in Connecticut.
Is it in the woods? Because I always feel like I'm not gonna be killed in the woods.
No.
Okay.
It's in, I could say it because it's in Westport, Connecticut.
Wait, would I?
Do you have friends in Westport?
I should live in Westport full time? Do you? Because I've been thinking, everyone's been bringing this up to me.
Don't full time. I love Westport.
Yeah.
I think that if you guys were considering getting a place, I would think you consider, I don't think you should go to Westport full time. You can't do that.
Okay.
Jason can't do that. I know you even better than I know Jason. Don't go to Westport full time. But Westport and our setup in Westport is fucking dope.
Yeah, you probably have your LA life again where you have a pool and a fucking backyard.
But I have the fucking beach and I literally can walk. I could FaceTime
you. Oh, I think you did. FaceTime me from the, that's where you were. Oh, yeah.
Shit is dope.
Amazing.
That shit is fucking dope. And our house is fucking dope. And I checked out with my wife.
Oh, that's awesome.
I was dealing with the house. We built the house.
Oh, you built it.
She did the whole fucking thing. And I was like, whatever. I was like, I couldn't deal with it.
Yeah, no, I can't.
And the house is sick. And both of us, when we're in the house, and it's not even, it's just so nice and so well decorated. And she did the whole fucking thing. And she dealt with all the fucking contractor pain in the ass motherfuckers. Pain in the ass, these motherfuckers. All the bullshit. All the fucking shit. And every time we're in there, we're like, this is fucking sick. We're like,
amazing.
We almost feel like kids. We're like, this is fucking sick.
Like, whose house do we break into?
Like, this is fucking nice.
I love that feeling.
It's cool. It's cool. So, but don't move to where, I don't think you should be. If you're not, you shouldn't be there full time. No. But you would like it though. And they would love you in Westport.
But what, really? Would I have like a nice
there's
following?
There's you know, there's housewives and there's women. I'm sure your people know you in Westport.
I could get like a little posse going.
Yes. Oh, for sure.
Okay, I'm into
for
it.
Sure, for
well,
sure.
But let me ask you this. If your sons were still young, would you be living in Westport full time? You'd have them in the city. I just want to learn from your fails. I want to make sure that I apply to my life.
I wish I had raised my kids in New York, but it just didn't, it just wasn't the way it was. It wasn't.
Okay.
We made the decision to go to LA. And,
okay.
You know, I mean, I wish, coulda, shoulda, woulda, blah, blah, blah. I wish I would never left New York.
Okay.
But if I didn't leave New York, I wouldn't have started act I, like it all
you
worked out
too.
Yeah, I should have came back earlier.
Yeah,
true. Yes, when I was, you know, rocking and rolling, but you know, habits are hard to break and
sure,
you know, whatever.
When did you get remarried? How long have you been married to your wife?
We have been remarried 7 years.
Oh wow. Oh my god. Okay,
7 years. Yep.
God, that's like so disappointing for my listeners because they were hoping that you were single. But that is amazing for you guys.
7 years. Yeah. We've been together like 14 years.
Oh, amazing. Oh my God. Okay. And does she have kids?
No kids.
Oh, that's the best. You're so lucky.
I am lucky. I'm lucky about that.
What would you have done with a daughter? Like, how would you be with a daughter?
A big fucking mush pushover.
See, I think you needed a daughter.
I would have been, okay. I would have been like that. I was kind of like that with my boys too, you know. I wasn't like some tough dad or anything like that. You know, I that's a persona.
Yes. And also like when you've been through trauma, like, and
But then you try, but then it's inconsistent. Yes. Like you try, and you know, my I remember one time I was trying to be like stern with my son.
Yeah.
And he was probably like 8 or 9 or 10, functioning like a young, maybe 10. He was like, "You're trying to act with me." Trying to act with me, and I was like,
"Oh no. Shit,
like, I'm in fucking trouble."
They're onto you.
Like you're picking up all my Robert De Niro shit. I'm trying to do like all. Like all my move, like what the fuck are you talking about?
Oh my God.
And I was like, first of all, I'm like, maybe I'm not a good actor because you're picking up on me acting.
Yes.
And second of all, like it's not working.
Yeah.
But he said that you're trying to act with me. you're acting. I was like, fuck.
Oh my God.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
And he said it like that. It's such like a kid. He did.
Oh, totally.
He didn't understand, but he did understand.
You're gaming me.
I'm trying to be tough or firm. And he picked up on it.
And I know that you're not. Oh, fuck.
I know. It's fucked up.
That's fucked up.
Fucked up. And it was like, you know, like criticism of my acting. Like,
totally. It's twofold.
Fuck.
Oh, my God. That's funny.
That's the first time I've articulated that because I just, I don't know, but I remember distinctly. I distinctly was trying to do my fucking shit. It was not working.
He's
at
like,
all.
I don't buy it. Next.
Nope.
Who's next?
Yeah.
Who's in the waiting room?
Yeah.
Bring that dad in.
Yeah. Bring in fucking Eli Roth. Yeah.
Get Eli Roth
yeah.
in here.
Yeah. Get him in here for the, no wonder you didn't get the, he should have said, no wonder you didn't get the bear Jew.
Oh my God.
This is why you didn't get the bear Jew.
That would have been beyond. Oh my God. Michael, I love you.
Oh shit. That's funny.
That is so funny.
That's fucked up. I remember that. I got to remind my wife about that.
I gotta use that.
Yeah.
That's good material for you.
That's good material.
Yeah. That's going on. That's on your next, when you're next with Andy Cohen, maybe.
100%. Can I just pivot with you real quick?
Yeah.
I don't want to go down the Housewives, Vanderpump, Bravo rabbit hole with you, but what reality shows are you watching?
I have young kids. That's why. No. Okay. Wait. You guys, the reason I love Michael, he saved my life.
Oh,
I was
that's
just
right.
trying
you
to promote
sucked.
My book. I don't right. know. I didn't know anything.
Right.
I lied my way onto the show.
Well, you're a good guest for Watch What Happens Live anyway, but you do need to know a little bit about the
show.
Right. And you told me beforehand.
I was like, Michael, help me. I know nothing.
Right. So they would ask you questions and I was like, Lala.
Yes.
Or I was like, Lisa Vanderpump.
Yeah.
Or like,
I let you look like you were just like this controlling.
Right. I was interrupting you and you were like, thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. Yes.
Right.
But really, I knew nothing. I needed you to save
right.
me.
Right. That's right.
Yeah.
Oh, see, I thought you were a fucking lunatic. Like me and my wife.
No, I only was a bachelor person. I loved Bachelor for many years.
Right. You have young kids.
But then once I had Sid, I stopped
I get it.
Watching TV.
I get it. See, I know there's a lot of females watching. Yeah. I was gonna go down the reality rabbit hole with Jenny,
I suck. But yeah. Should I get into it? And if I do, where to begin?
No. If
I think it would be good for my career if I could talk about it.
Well, the thing that I think you would get inspired by as an actor,
yeah,
actress,
yeah,
if you watch the shows like I watch them, uh-huh. you, especially the kind of funny shit that you do,
yeah,
you would be inspired as an actress. And
really?
100%. The characters and the quirks, 100%. Okay. And I did a very good show with the great Jennifer Jason Leigh called Atypical.
Wow.
Uh-huh. And Jennifer doesn't watch shit. And I would tell her all the time and to the point where she was like, okay, but she'd never listen. I was like, Jennifer, I'm telling you, the kind of fucking roles that you play, because she plays fucking wackos.
Yes.
She's never playing like the straight up slow
never.
Pitch. I said, I am telling you, and I'm not going to tell you anymore.
Yeah.
You should be watching The Real Housewives because you would be so inspired as an actress, especially the kind of shit that she does. Now, she does different than you, but the quirky, especially it's in your age demographic, you would be inspired.
Hooked.
And you know what I would start with if I were you?
What just should
you,
I start with?
If I were you, I would start with the next, I would rewatch the reboot of Real Housewives of New York and then go into Real Housewives of New York when it comes back on again. Because you're a New York housewife, a real New York housewife.
Yes.
If you wanted to just start watching the OG Real Housewives of New York, there is a woman named Ramona Singer.
Uh-huh.
Everybody in your audience is like, yeah, right?
Yes.
There's a woman named Sonia Morgan that you would be so inspired with.
Obsessed by.
But just as a performer, you would go, I know why Michael is telling me to watch this.
All right. 100%. I'm going to start from the beginning.
You should.
Okay.
And it's easy to watch. It's not like you're watching fucking Shakespeare. It's not like hard to follow.
Right, right.
And in the beginning, you might go, but if just once you get out of season one, you'll go, you'll be, trust me.
Okay.
Trust me. You would have a good time with it. And
would you ever be a housewife? Like if they came to you and said,
a housewife?
You'd be on
how the fuck could I be a
Because
would I do
I feel
a reality
like they would have a
show?
Man on Housewives. I feel like
well,
they would.
Well, the only way I'd be if my wife did it, and my wife couldn't do it. She couldn't do it.
She wouldn't want it.
Well, number one, we're so aware of the shows.
Right. But that's what would be so funny.
We would.
If you were on it as a series regular.
Oh, man.
I would die.
We love it. We fucking love it.
Has Andy ever mentioned that to you?
No,
I would
no,
love
no. Now, can I do a plug,
regular.
Shameless plug?
Yeah.
We just started an all reality TV podcast. My wife and I called Rappaport's Reality, where we just talk about all. Because
she's obsessed too.
All day, every day, we watch it. It's like fucking sports for us. It's like sports for me. And like, we watch all the Bravo.
Okay.
All the fucking Traitors, Bachelor, Bachelorette, all that shit. All of it. We watch it all. And we love it. So we just started a podcast. Because on my podcast, you know, sometimes I'll dip into something that's like big,
like Scandival. You heard about that on Vanderpump.
Yes.
So like, or I'll dip into something specific and I dip out because I know my listeners are like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like,
right.
What the fuck? Some of them like it, but I know the majority are like,
get back to the sports.
Or talk shit or fucking bullshit. Yeah. They don't want to hear me deep diving about why, you know, Real Housewives of Salt Lake City. They don't care about the minutia of it.
Yeah.
So we just did one. So we have an outlet for the minutia because we talk about it all the time. And I need an outlet to talk about it all the time. Because we love it.
You guys should tour that.
That would be fun. Let us get to, you know, episode 30 before we start talking to about tours. But that would be
right. I feel like you could pack.
But you can't be on the show because it's
not
pop culture.
I need to get good. I need to learn.
God damn it.
I need to start at the beginning. Fuck. Okay.
You're gonna appreciate Real Housewives of New York. Trust me.
I'm in. Michael Rappaport, thank you so much. What is the name of the new podcast?
The name of the new podcast is Rappaport's Reality.
And Rappaport's Reality.
Where all podcasts are streaming. And if you like Housewives, if you like Bravo, Vanderpump Rules, The Real Housewives of Everywhere, or Pop Culture, it's all we talk. I don't even curse on it.
Whoa.
Because, you know, there might be a shit or something like that, but it's not like you fucking. Because reality TV and pop, especially reality TV, it doesn't bring, it's a different
vibe.
I love all the housewives.
Yes.
Even when I can't stand them,
I
love them. Even the ones that are on my nerves, I love them. And so does my wife. We love, even if we can't stand them, but it's not like aggressively can't stand. So it's
fun.
Oh my God, I love it so much. You've missed, you have kids, so you haven't missed out, but there's always the Peacock app to stream and start Real Housewives in New York. Okay. And you'll be like, okay. Jason will like it too if he starts fucking with
it. Oh yeah, Jason's such a little yenta. He'll be all over it.
100%.
Okay.
100%. You because you have a 10 and a 6-year-old, it might still be tough, but you could start dipping. You could
dip.
Put the big toe in there.
A big toe and maybe like, I don't know, a middle toe.
Put a foot in. Just put a foot in. If you don't like it, take it out.
You're right.
You know, Real Housewives in New York, starting from the beginning, Ramona Singer, Sonia Morgan, you're going to go, oh, shit.
Okay, I'll be texting about it.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Michael.
This is the first of many, 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 many podcasts
maybe,
of yours.
If I can find time in this studio to book,
find time,
back.
Find studio, and actually find the place.
Yeah, it'll happen.
I'll be back on your, like, let me say, I'm going to come back when you do, like, 100 episodes.
Okay, for my 100th episode, it's you.
Boom. And way, it will have a whole, there'll be a different,
We'll have new things to discuss.
Is that overwhelming that you have like 100 episodes?
I was thinking I had 44. What do you have in a year? Like, how many do you owe?
Oh, cool. So I don't have to come back till.
No, you're all fine. Right, you're fine. You'll be like retired in Westport at that point. We'll be shooting from Westport because I'll be your neighbor.
All right, cool.
All right. Thank you.